CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 145 with Dr. Aslam Evren Kember. Keys to success in surgical training for young surgeons by a truly amazing professor of ophthalmology. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today, I have a very special guest, a very dear friend, an incredible surgical professor and teacher. And that is Dr. Aslam Evren Kember from Turkey. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be with you in your podcast. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. So I actually interacted with you last year, a year ago. I was in Turkey for your national meeting, which I had an incredible time. The only national meeting I went to where every night there's a party.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. And I had incredible food, met with incredible ophthalmologists, and I really had a great time. I learned so much. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. It was our pleasure to have you in Turkey. And you motivated our young ophthalmologists, all of us, so much. So we still talk about you. We still talk about your lectures. So thanks for coming.
Oh, my pleasure. Yes. Even before that, we did an online lecture together with some of your residents.
Now,
one thing that my American colleagues will be very surprised. So you have an incredibly large residency program. In the USA, most residency programs are 4 residents per year for 4 years, so a total of 16 residents. Our program, UCLA, was very large. It's 8 a year for 4 years, so 32 residents. But you're double that.
Yes.
62 residents.
62 residents, because this is a huge ophthalmology clinic, and this is the biggest referral center in Turkey. We are like 115 ophthalmologists, including those 62 residents. So this is huge. We have like 16 professors, 17 associate professors. So this is a big teaching hospital. So 62 is enough for us.
Yeah, and it's very busy. You were saying your residents, at any given day, you have like 14 operating theaters? Doing
yes.
More than 100 surgeries a day?
Yes, 110, like 50 cataracts per day.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yes.
So then your residents are getting tremendous training. When they graduate, they've probably done 300-400 cataracts.
Yes, absolutely. They get 300 or 400 cataracts, all the challenging cases like iphysis, pseudoexfoliation cases, they get all those kind of experience. So when they graduate, they are all capable of doing all those kinds of surgeries.
Wow, that's great. So you have a secret way of doing it, a secret sauce, a method. So when a resident comes to you, first year resident,
yes,
they don't even know how to spell ophthalmology. They've
yes.
never looked through a surgical microscope. How do you
yes.
take them from such a beginner to doing 300-400 cases later and graduating? What's the process?
Yes.
How many years?
So this is a 4-year program, and the first year, the newcomers are, we always have them read and learn. So the
okay.
first year, they don't go to OR. They just accompany us while we are examining patients. They see the refraction. They read about it, the cataract. And we have simulators after like 6 months. Or so, we have simulators, and they can simulate any kind of surgery, not any kind, let's say the cataract most of all, because that's the primary surgery they do. And we follow the like ESCRS website. They can be a member free of charge, the ESCRS.
Right.
So, and I am the mentor in ESCRS, so I give them some kind of homeworks. So they do that. And then when they complete the whole set, they have a certificate. They all know about all about the incisions, all OVDs and cracking techniques, all those things. They don't do it, but they learn it. So the first year is accumulating like all those knowledges, and they read Konski. They watch your videos. They are cataract.com is our primary source of videos. So all of us having, getting learn every detail, and you have a textbook just for residents. We know they also follow that. So.
Right.
You have a big impact on our residency program. So I just want to thank you for creating such a big gift that is free of charge, that is available to all residents all over the world. So thank you for that big heart.
Oh. Of course. I mean, your residents are very fortunate because they're in a great program with great teachers and they can do so much surgery. But other programs, whether it be in Europe, in the U.S., you may not have so much hands-on surgery, especially there's certain countries in Europe where the hands-on surgical experience in the residency is very little.
Yeah, that is because we are a big program and we have, let's go from here. From first year to second year, they now get to do some extraocular surgeries like the chalazions or small lid surgeries. So they start using microscope, how to focus on the microscope, and they start to learn phacodynamics. So they are not just a technician, but they are becoming a doctor. And now at the end of the second year, they get to do the first incisions and then with the IA irrigation and aspiration, those things that will not change the direction of a surgery so that they could know how to focus in the eye. So when they become the third year, they get their first surgery. So I usually give them to the retina specialist. So that's the perfect place to start for the first surgeries, because whenever they have a complication, they all manage the complication. Right. And the thing, the other programs may not be willing to give those responsibility of the patient would be because they don't have that much of retina surgeons available right in the OR, right next to us, so that they can handle the complication right away, because they close the patient, then the patient goes up to the service, and then the next day they come and, you know, they manage. Usually, it may be a problem, but in our case, we have a big program, so anytime we have a retina surgeon available who will take care of those problems, so we are much more willing to give our cases to the residents so they can try. Of course, with our supervision, nobody does the surgery alone. So always with the attending, always with the general ophthalmologist or a professor, they are doing their surgeries and they know where to stop. We first teach them, be slow and stop when we say stop. So this is very important.
That's very important. That's probably the most important thing. If you're a new resident, you're beginning, you have to listen to the advice of your attending, your professor. If they say stop, you need to stop. Yes. They don't always listen.
yeah. If they don't, we make them listen. So they don't get more surgeries for a while. So when they become much more confident in their surgeries, then they start, we don't scrub with them, but just watch from the screen so they feel they like a surgeon and they do their surgeries. And when they are about to graduate, then they are capable of doing those eyepieces and pseudo exfoliation, putting the ring on. Even with the after doing the retina rotation, they can take the silicone out and they can put the Yamane technique and take the haptic out of the eye. So they get to do those things because there is a person available next to them. If there's something wrong, they handle it. And whenever, for the fourth year, whenever they have a posterior capsular rupture, they let the retina surgeons let them do it to the point, you know, they need to take the patient from the resident. So they learn how to handle the complication. That's how they feel confident when they graduate.
Well, that's great to have like a safety net. So every day when they're doing surgery, if something happens, well, the retina surgeon's right here.
Yes.
Exactly. Same day, immediately help you, done.
Yes. Yes.
That's very good. That's a great setup.
Yes. And also we motivate the residents, and there's also a psychological background to that because 62 of different people. So you handle their upsets, their sometimes they are so tired for the overload of that much of surgeries, for on-call visits and everything. So you need to handle those young people and giving them a target. So trying to show them that it is a joy, it is a journey. The learning and being getting improved the next day is the most important thing in the journey of learning something, including ophthalmology. So that mindset, they can handle that condition. They can handle having a complicated surgery and, oh, I cannot do it. My hands are trembling. And, right. You know, those kind of things. Oh, I'm not a surgeon. I will not survive. So step by step, we come over those struggles in their mind and then put them on the track again, and then they go on doing their surgery. So both the structural thing and the human psychology, when you combine it, we have a good result.
Yeah, the mindset is so important, but we sometimes don't talk about it enough.
Yes.
Because when you're young, you forget that on your road to becoming a great surgeon, there will be ups and downs. You'll have an amazing case you did, and there'll be a complication case. Yes. But you still learn from every one of those cases.
Yes, that is the most important thing. And we always tell them. So we need to see those bad, complicated surgeries as a way of learning. And, you know, to improve ourselves, we always tell them. And also to ourselves, we also improve every day. We are not just the residents. So we right. keep that in mind and all the time. And life actually, as the Peter Sellers movie, being there, I love it. Life is a state of mind. Whole life, every experience yeah. depends on state of mind.
Oh, that is so true. I always looked at it in a similar manner, because I always thought, like, if my goal is to become a professional tennis player, which I will never become a tennis player like that. that's my goal, I can't win 100% of my matches. I'm going to lose some matches. But the question is, did we learn from that loss in the match? What did I learn from it? And if I learned something from it, it's still another step on the path to becoming a great tennis player. Well, same thing with being a surgeon.
Yes.
If you have a complication, it can either be a mistake or it can be a lesson. Hopefully yes. it's a lesson. You learn from that lesson.
Yes, exactly. And as we are like 53 professionals, they rotate with all the professors and associate professors. So everybody has a different way of handling cataract surgery and also watching videos like yours, like ICOMES, like Amar Agarwal's, like Osher's. You know, so many ways to learn if you really want to learn. So afterwards, you have your own style. And so there is a variety of seeing all those different kinds of philosophies, handling the cataract surgery, being neat, and handling those precious tissues. So you look like that, like a very precious thing that your patient depend on you and trusted in you. So if you look in this way, you need to be better and better each day.
That's for sure. And I also like your advice when you work with 53 different professors.
Yes.
When you work with Professor A, you should do everything the way that professor likes. And
that's
with Professor
right.
B, you do it that way. And so
yes.
you initially, you're just going to copy or emulate each professor and do things only their way. And then later, you can develop your own style.
Exactly. Like I operate with low IOP phaco. I usually use 36 millimeters mercury. It's not like that with the other professors. So when they came, they are so hesitated with the 36 millimeters mercury. And when they see it, it's so stable, there's no surge, it's stable, we can still survive with this IOP. Right. And they have the courage to try it. So every single person, every single surgeon adds to their education.
Right, for sure. And it's important when they come to you, to your operating room, if you like 36 millimeters mercury of pressure, then they should do that. Don't
yes.
bring the other professors. No, for each professor. No, I think it's really important because then you get to decide on your own what is best for you. I would make notes in my phone, right? When I'm like, okay, this professor likes it this way. Even little things like draping. This professor always likes the drapes with the Steri-Strips and the Tegaderm. No, this one likes the other. Always do it the way they like while you're still in their training and still learning.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that is very important. Now, let me ask you have a surgical simulator there, but
yes.
I'm sure you also have a wet lab. Is there a big difference in the two?
I believe the simulators are for the very beginning, but they usually do not simulate the real surgery. Wet labs are better. So you have the real microscope, the real thing to suture, like your motto, 10 on items, 10 sutures at 10 minutes. Like this is a motto for wet lab. This is those kind of...
It's not easy. That's not easy to do.
As we have a very great cornea section, they get to do lots of sutures because we leave the sutures to the last year residents. Those 16 sutures, they put the sutures on 360 degrees of sutures. So they learn how to suture. Well, when they first start, they do it on some kind of tomato or other kind of things with the suture materials. They suture it, so they get to use the binocular vision of the microscope and how to handle the needle holder, those kind of things, and then they put the suture. So wet labs are great for capsular X's. They try those capsular X's, and with the phaco machine, we teach the phaco dynamics. They step on it, they feel the noise and the sound of the step, and also how to change the parameters so that they are not a technician. If something happens, they don't look for somebody to organize their settings. So these are the things that we usually teach at the wet labs. And these are just for our residents in our OR at the spare time after the routine day.
Well, that's fantastic. I think there's room for both. So surgical simulators, the downside is they're very expensive. But I think they do have a good role. But ultimately, there's nothing like getting your hands wet. And that's if you're right. Going to practice suturing, remember for the young residents, suture dominant hand towards you, dominant hand away from you, non-dominant hand towards you, non-dominant hand. You got to be able to do both.
That's right. Good. Yes. Yes.
But yeah, for me, I found that like the ability to suture under the microscope was probably the best predictive measure of how you'll be in the operating room. And the reason is it just teaches you to use your hands under a microscope in a very skilled manner. And that's if you know how to use your hands, then now you can follow directions. If I say, no, move the chopper here, do this, like you can work inside the eye. Because you got to remember, sometimes we don't even think about it, but the volume in which we're working is like nothing. It's like AC is half a quarter of a cc.
That's right.
If the empty bag, maybe another quarter of a cc, and most half a cc of fluid. That's nothing. We work inside that.
Yes, and there's no way to move the cornea or iris. You know, right. You need to have a stable hand, and you need to visualize. The microscope setting is also very important at the beginning of the surgery to have a good depth of focus. So these are all part of our... We'll also learn each day, you know, each day we learn something from you, from something from other person. So you know, in our like you have a great teaching in one of your videos that you hydrate the anterior stroma of the incision so that if with a little bit of BSS it is sealed up. So whenever I do that, I say cataract.com, and they always you know, you are with us in our everyday surgery.
Yeah, we continue to learn throughout the entirety of our careers. That's something we actually do. So we were talking earlier about doing, you know, DMEC and PDEC, these corneal transplantation techniques. But when we did our training many decades ago, that didn't exist. So you obviously learned it on your own in the last few years.
Yes, that is what I teach also to the residents. And I learned it from my mentors. Whenever you need to improve, you learn something new, you need to have some time and go to who is best in the world. Like I learned DMEC from Dr. Melis's clinic at Notre Dame in Holland. So I went there from the best, from the one who invented, who described this. So afterwards, we had the courage to start on our own when we came back to Turkey. Also, while starting PDEC, I went to India, and with Dr. Agarwal and Dr. Preeti Naveen, I learned about it, and that we invited Dr. Naveen to Turkey, and she taught us how to do PDEC. That's how we learned it from the first hand, from the person who described it to the literature. And also, one more time, I went to India. That time, I learned CARES from Dr. Preeti Naveen and Dr. Susan Jacob. People who described it to the literature. So whenever we need to learn something, it's a good idea to go to the person who teaches this. It's not just the teaching. You can also learn from the book, from the videos. It's not like that. It is important to be in the OR of Dr. Amar Agarwal to see how he does that. See Dr. Susan Jacob, how she does, how she plans, how she talks to the patient, how she manages the next day. So it's not just learning, watching the videos and learning it. To be with a mentor, to be with a person who does this the way you would like to do in the future, so that you got the best out of it. So this is how we grow.
How do you get the courage, though? So this is a psychology question. So you've watched the videos, you've read the books, you went and visited the other professors, and you learned from them. How do you now have the courage to come back to your home, to your own operating room, your own clinic, and do it for the first time?
The thing is, for the first time, like in DMEG, I invited one of the professors from another university, and he did the first case for me, and he accompanied for the next case. So I did it with his supervision, and then we go on doing this. So this is a very safe way. So you cannot control and think about every kind of possibility during surgery. But when you are with a mentor, when you are with a person who did this before, this is a good start.
That's a great way of doing it. If you have that ability, I think that's a great, great idea. And then, of course, like when I started to learn DMEC, I watched a lot of videos. I had the courage. I did the first case. It was okay. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't pretty. But then I learned from every single case. And after about 10 of them, I said, wow, it's starting to look like a beautiful surgery now. So the important part is I made sure everyone I did, I videoed it, went back and watched it again. And what could I do better? I'd make notes. What needs improvement?
That's right. That's right. For the getting better. Also, for DMEG, there is a book, Unfolding Techniques of Dr. John Parker and Dr. Meles. So it's like mathematics, and says do not push the cornea without a purpose. If it doesn't work, don't insist on that. So think about it and just stop. And he says, if this is like that, tap on this way, tap on that way. Before each DMEG, I used to read the book in 2 hours. In 2 hours, I finished the book. The next day, I'm ready mentally how to tap this way. So, you know, I do the surgery in my mind and get ready for the case, for the first cases. This is how it works for the first cases.
I love the idea that you do the surgery in your mind. So what I do now, my big operating day is Monday. So Sunday nights, I sleep early. And I know if I say, tomorrow I have this very challenging case, I kind of play it in my head. What am I going to do next? What step? I actually envision the surgery as I'm lying in bed trying to go to sleep.
Yeah. You have an A plan, a B plan, a C plan. Get ready for that. And let the team know about that. You know, I have so nice nurses that they say, oh, you're going to do something different. I watch videos about that. You know, the nurse gets ready to do this new technique. So this is incredible. So this is the teamwork that I love in our hospital.
Yes, I love it too. I do even one step more. Maybe I'm a little bit crazy, but I'll write down my plan. Mm-hmm. I'll make a list of supplies I want in the room just so they have it ready. So the nurses know. So this is a very tough case. They booked extra time for it. And I have my plan, and for the nurse, I have a list of supplies they should have in the room.
Excellent.
That way, the supplies are available, because they can't read your mind. The other thing is, your scrub techs become so good that a lot of times they will give me what I want without even asking for it.
Yes.
You just can read your mind. They just kind of know. Right. Or there'll be a time where I'm struggling a little bit, and then they say, here, would you like this? I'm like, yes, thank you.
yes, exactly. Being a team is great. So Everybody knows what to do. We have a work plan. We have our A and B, C plans, and everybody is ready for that. So then that is fun. Then that is joy to be with them. And after a very challenging case, we say, wow, we did it.
Right. Now, I still get emails from ophthalmologists, young ophthalmologists, once or twice a month. They say, I'm struggling in the operating room. And they say, instead of going to the operating room and enjoying, I go to the operating room and I'm afraid.
That's bad.
So what advice do you have for this young person? And they doubt themselves. I don't know if I'm meant to be a surgeon. Maybe I shouldn't do this. What advice would you have for them? Because they've come so far and now they're stuck in this point.
Now, usually the fear stems from lack of knowledge. Whenever you have good knowledge, you watch the videos, you read about it, you discuss with your mentor, you are ready for that. If you don't know what to do, then you are fearful. So we need to fill the gap of lack of knowledge. And I usually listen to them. So why do you fear? Which step are you hesitating? Like they usually doing the sculpting, they fear of getting, you know, posterior capsule. So they are so shallow, so they cannot crack the nucleus. And their maneuvers are, they are scared to do that. So when you say that, you know, you can look at the lens thickness because we have all in the biometry and the tip of the handle is like 1 millimeter thick. So you can see the depth of your nucleus. So you give a mathematical way that so then they feel confident about it. So the confidence comes with knowledge. And we need to see, and I usually watch them doing it, doing the thing that they are scaring. So would like to see you, what is the problem? Why they struggle? What is the fear? So afterwards, with the baby steps, then doing the things they really confident in doing, like putting the IOL in or taking the viscoelastic out. So small steps, you need to do the things that you are much confident. Afterwards, you have the courage to do the things that you are fearful.
I like your idea that, yeah, you're probably fearful because you're lacking in the knowledge. I've seen exactly what you described, where the resident's making a groove in the nucleus, but they're afraid of going too deep, so they make a shallow groove, and now the nucleus won't split. They get frustrated.
Yes. But
you're right. If you realize, okay, what is my lens thickness? 4.5 millimeters in this patient. And now the phaco tip is 1 millimeter. So you can go much more than you think.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. That's actually some great advice. Now, another bit of advice that I had for my residents, which I thought was important, was learning to use your non-dominant hand. Because if you look at my series now, if I'm holding the phaco port with my right hand, the chopper hand does most of the work, the left hand. The chopper. So you have to have both hands of good dexterity. So I would always tell my residents, try to eat food, brush your teeth, shave, do whatever you want to do with the non-dominant hand all day until it feels normal.
And also, it's also a mind thing. It is impossible to do surgery with your left hand. You cannot do the surgery with your left hand. Now, when I do the temporal incision surgery, I still sit at the head side of the patient. Oh. And I use with my right hand for the right eye, temporal, and the left hand for the left eye. So they see it. This is how they break the blocks of the mind. So that is possible. When they see somebody doing with the left hand, this is the rules of the mind. When you break them, then say that's okay. If Dr. Özlem can do it, I can try it. And then this is how it works. It's like I had an experience with walking on the fire. That is the thing when the mind crashes, and you know, walking on fire means. It is all the mind codes that blocks you from doing anything. So when you do that, then you can see that, okay, I can command over my mind. So it is just the mind rules that rules me. So if I make it, would like to make a, you know, improvement or be at the cutting edge of doing something, I know that I can do it again. I can crash the limits of my mind. So it is just the coding system. So I love human psychology. I know the ways to motivate, and I love following those kind of leaders in this respect. So learn them and, you know, teach the way, to my residents, the way they teach those human psychology and motivate the people.
Yeah, overcoming the fear is really a huge part of it. And you're right in that situation where it's like in the U.S., these people who walk over the hot coals. So it's like a yes. little hot coals or fire, right? You did it.
Yes. Wow. Have you heard Tony Robbins? It's an American motivation speaker, Tony Robbins.
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, so he does workshop for 4 days for motivation and teaches the techniques. So that's how, you know, we can improve as a leader, as a mentor, to teach other people and motivate them. So that's a good way for the ones who would like to, you know, try it.
No, I think that's right. Getting past some of the psychological issues is a large part of it. And then after you do that, I think you'll find you'll succeed a whole lot more. I think the ultimate goal is to make your time in the operating room a pleasure.
Yes.
Then you'll really enjoy it. If you enjoy it, oh, you'll be so motivated. You'll learn more. You'll do more. You'll become a better surgeon if you really enjoy it.
That's right. Not the operating room while examining the patient, while, you know, putting a diagnosis that like 3 people before you couldn't make it. And when the patient comes to you and you spend a little bit more time, a little bit, you know, intuition and and then you put the diagnosis and then you are the happiest person in the world. And it's the joy when you serve to the other people. It's really... I believe the biggest joy is serving other people, like operating them or helping them medically or, you know, calming them when they're in problem. It's the best part of being a doctor, being a surgeon, being an educator. So this is the greatest motivation.
Oh, and I think you're right, for sure. That's great. Now, one more challenge I had. I actually taught residents in the operating room like you for 22 years. I did it from the year 2000. To 2022, but then I actually transitioned out of that. So I actually don't teach residents hands-on anymore. But one of the challenges I had there in my last year was there was a big debate. This is very common in the US where they say, I would give every senior resident the same amount of operating room time, same number of days, same number of hours, but whatever case you want. But then other people said, no, you should make sure they all finish with the same number of cases. So if the one resident does 12 cases in a day, and the other one does only 6 cases in a day, the slow resident should give twice as many days. So they finish with the same numbers. And I thought, no, we should have equal opportunity, not equal outcome.
I believe so. Yeah.
So that was what my feeling was. But unfortunately, believe me, I had a lot of opposition.
Not every one of us is the same like a resident. So if the resident is slow, if the resident is more struggling with the hand coordination and the feet coordination, there's a big coordination system when you do a cataract surgery and needs more time. Everybody doesn't have to graduate doing this pseudo exfoliation, IFIS cases. If the some residents are not that much of capable, so we cannot have them all do the same level when they graduate, not all of them. So opportunities should be equal, but the way the resident uses this opportunity is his responsibility.
I agree 100%. I really do. I think that's the correct way of doing it. It's the traditional way we've always done it. It's just a little bit of the different mindset in the last few years. Which, honestly, that's part of the reason why I said it's just not for me anymore. I need to do different things in life. And so I had to kind of move on. And
you're still teaching. You're every day. You are posting a video. You are in our lives, the lives of residents. You are touching their lives. You don't even know whose life you are touching every day. So you are serving all the residents, all for education. You are a big heart. And when we meet you, it's like we would like to have you in a session with the Zoom. And you didn't know us. You didn't any of our residents. Somebody emailed you from Turkey and you said yes.
Of course.
You know, it's a memorable thing. He said, yeah, Dr. Uday Devgan gave a lecture to us. They felt very significant. They felt very important. They felt very, you know, in our clinic, we had Dr. Uday Devgan gave us a lecture. So we are special. You know, we all have that pride.
Yeah, you know, it's so important to mentor the young doctors because that used to be us. One day, one of these young residents is going to do my FACO. I better make sure they're good.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So no, it's absolutely a pleasure. Now let's talk a little bit about the corneal transplantation technique. So you've really done a lot of work recently with PDEC versus DMEC. How do you choose one or the other? Give me kind of your mindset.
Yes. The DMEC surgery is for the regular cases when everything's fine, when you have a nice anterior chamber like the Fuchs dystrophy, pseudophakic bullous keratopathy, nice pupil, not vitrectomized eyes. DMEC works great, and you handle with the aqueous dynamics. You unroll the graft, and you are done. But when it's complicated, especially in vitrectomized eyes, and with the cetones, when the aphakia, those complicated cases, then you need to do PDEC surgery. Now, the difference between the DMEC and PDEC graft is just the Duwa's layer, but it adds so much to the graft motility, durance, and handling. Technically, it gives you the advantage of handling the tissue like it as if there's a DSEC tissue. If you have done any DSEC, you know that it's so easy and it's so thick, and you can just put it in the eye and put the air in, and it's just there and sticks up. With the PDEC tissue, you have all the advantages of DSEC handling tissue, because if you put the graft inside and you just put it, you just put air and it attaches to the cornea, and with your reverse Sinsky hook, you can work on the edges of the graft. You can take the graft wherever you like, so you can move the graft. So it gives you all the advantages of DSEC, and you can handle all the hard cases. You just push the graft to the cornea and you work on the edges and you put the graft wherever you like. So this is incredible, incredible. After we have learned PDEC techniques, then we are using PDEC for all challenging cases. So we are not doing PKs anymore, as long as it's not a full thickness corneal trauma or a scar from keratitis, then we are always doing lamellar surgery. Even with the worst scenarios, not every patient needs to see great. We are not expecting a refractive result. Sometimes it's therapeutic. Sometimes they are so old, you cannot do PK with all the 16 sutures. They get infected. They don't put the drops on. So for them to have a comfortable eye, not painful, not red, you need to do a DMEC surgery to, you know, stabilize the cornea so that it's getting thinner and just, you know, stable. For those to make those kind of challenging cases, PDEC is the greatest way and the greatest technique to learn. So I all advise every cornea surgeon, it's not usually done in US, I know, to learn PDEC surgery. And it's you may go to Dr. Agarwal to India. Also, there are some centers like John Parker and several doctors very prominent in United States that they are doing PDEC. So I think you need to have in your toolbox.
So you basically don't do DSEC anymore. You'd rather just do PDEC. Now, the question is then, for a newer surgeon, a younger beginning surgeon, can you just do PDEC and don't even do DMEC?
Yes, this is how they do in India. They don't do DMECs, they just do PDEC. The thing is, we don't get young donors. You need to have young donors for PDEC. After 40 years of age, you can have a type 2 bubble in the graft, so you lose the graft and it's just a DMARD graft. And when you have a DMARD graft for 40 years of donor, it's a very tight scroll. So it's really hard to unroll that 40 years of graft. You can do it, but it's harder. So you need to have young donors, and it's also harder to find young donors. So you need to have expertise in both kind of techniques so that you can handle each donor age. Every donor age, you have a solution. But for your question, yes, of course. It's easier to do PDAC than DMARD because it's just the preparation of the graft which is hard. If you can get over preparation of the graft, the rest of the surgery is much more easier than DMARD.
Right. And then, but for PDAC, there may be a little more hyperopic shift, right? Or about the same.
About it, I haven't read anything about it. They all have the hyperopic shift. I don't know if there's a significant difference between DMARD and PDAC. We don't behave differently while selecting IUL power.
Okay, it's fantastic. In the U.S., PDAC is just not as popular. I just was in Agarwal's clinic in July, We saw some beautiful PDAC surgery. And certainly, I think in his clinic, that's just overtaken everything. There's a tremendous amount of PDAC surgery and almost no DMARD needed.
Yes, exactly. They are always having challenging surgeries. And when they invited me to give a PDAC talk in India, I was like getting the most challenging cases on my own. But all those people are doing such cases that they're just the easy, simple cases of mine. They're like expert surgeons with all those kind of surgeries. They are just doing great.
Yeah, it's an unusual place because, I mean, first, mega population, right? 1.4 billion people. So huge population. And then I think India's got to be the country with the most ophthalmologists, period. There's so many people. There's so many ophthalmologists. It's unbelievable. But yeah, there's a tremendous amount of pathology. And then certainly, in Dr. Agarwal's center, it's a referral center. So he gets the most unusual cases. Really amazing. You could spend a day there and you cannot believe how much variety you saw.
That's right.
Yeah, no, in incredible stuff. Yeah, it's impressive to me how you kept learning. Now, do you think we'll get to the point of injecting just those endothelial cells that they're developing now?
I don't know if you'll see that, but the next generation probably will be injecting those cells. Like intravitreals, we'll ask the nurse or technician, not the nurse or technician, but you know, the resident, second year resident, will be giving the cells to the anterior chamber and the patient will be done, most probably. It will be getting simpler and simpler.
Yeah, no, I think there's so many more advances in ophthalmology. I'm telling you, so many neat things are coming. The one I'm most excited about, as you saw last month, was the world's first robotic cataract surgery was done.
Yes. Incredible. Yeah. From different side, and you know, you can handle the case. That is incredible.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to work with the Horizon team, which is, of course, my financial disclosure there. But we did 10 eyes together, and I did surgery for all 10 of them. They all went beautifully. It was really quite amazing.
How did you feel while doing the surgery?
Well, there's a lot of pressure on me because obviously this is a very important clinical trial. This is the world's first, the first in human robotic surgery. So you certainly want it to go well. And we had a variety of different cases. They weren't all the same, but everything just went smoothly. It was really, in fact, there were certain parts of the robot that I loved so much. I wanted my own operating room. The robot has real-time OCT.
Oh, okay.
At all times. At a very, very high rate. So it knows at any given second, fraction of a second, where's the capsule? It knows. Wow. And so it's really amazing to be able to do that. Or I'd say, is there more cortex in the bag? Or is that what is, and they say, oh yes, there's more cortex, OCT scan. Or I'd put the lens in the bag and then say, wait, is that trailing happening in the bag? And they're like, yes, confirmed, in the bag. So just to have the OCT was just amazing. And then future developments, you can program a robot to say, okay, as I operate, I'll control the robot. Don't let me come within 10 microns of the capsule.
Yeah, probably.
Right. Or let's say you're making a groove. You could say, keep me 1 millimeter of lens thickness on the bottom for my groove. And it will not let you go beyond that. You can program whatever you want.
Yes. Isn't that amazing?
Really is. It's just going to be a game changer. So I think the robot, I'll tell you for sure, the robot's not going to replace us for sure, but it's just going to make us a better version of ourselves. It's going to help us. It'll assist us. It'll make life, wow, it's going to be a different world.
Yeah, I love your word, the better version of us. Yes, they will help to be our, I mean, we'll get a better version of us. That's the perfect way to say that.
Right. And it's, I think, the important thing for the young ophthalmologist, as we were talking about, boy, you better keep learning. Keep learning every day, every week, learn something new. It makes ophthalmology more fun if you have something interesting that you're learning.
Yes.
And it keeps your skills.
And anything that doesn't grow dies. So we need to grow every other day. So this is life. Whenever you stop growing, you start dying. So it's important to every day improve a little bit, a little bit, a little bit.
Oh, I love that say. I've never heard that before. That's a great. Well, you must be the favorite professor of all the 150 faculty members. I'm sure you're like the number one favorite of the residents.
Thank you. Thank you. I try to make it fun for them because teaching is never good without fun. When you are serious, they cannot learn. So it's fun is the main step of teaching something. Then they can get with the nice emotion. Emotion is important for their long-term memory. So if you want to teach something, if you want to get into the long-term memory, you have to combine it with the emotion of the person. So it is the fun is the best way.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different mindset than we used to have many years ago.
Yes, exactly. That old angry professors.
I think times have changed, and probably for in a good direction. But I think
Yes.
also the young doctors have more challenges than we did, because in the same amount of time, same 4 years, they have to learn everything we learned, plus all the new things that were developed in the last 20 years.
Well, sometimes they don't need to learn it with the new machines of the biometry. Everything is calculated inside, so they don't need to say, "Oh, this is a short eye. Oh, this is a long eye. I need to do this one call correction. I don't need to do that." That's just put in the Barrett calculator, and it adjusts everything. They don't need to learn the basics as we did. So everything's ready with just one click. You get the result.
Yeah, and I mean that's certainly improved a whole lot for sure. That's changed in a big way. But do you think we'll get to like automated readouts? Like you don't have to look at your topography because the machine will scan it and the machine will say, yes, 75% chance of form frus keratoconus or steep axis here, or do this, or well, I don't, maybe we'll get to that.
Most probably, and they will warn you that the patient had keratoconus, use another formula, they will warn. So, like the once in a while have patients with pseudophakic bullous keratopathy and multifocal IOLs because the surgeon missed the Fuchs endothelial dystrophy in the patient and didn't check for the endothelial cells. So with those all those artificial intelligence machines, those errors will be minimized and they will just we listed the risk factors of this patient is blah 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 Fuchs endothelial, the keratoconus, the long axial length, all the risk will be listed. Maybe they will refer to watch number 13 video of Dr. Uday Devgan before doing the surgery.
Yeah, it's like what I'm trying to develop now is an AI engine for the cataract coach videos. So I want the AI engine to use the videos as the input data source. So then I want a resident to be able to say, I'm having trouble learning vertical chop. Which video should I watch? And I'll say, buh, 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 buh. So we're trying to develop it now. It's not easy.
That is perfect, and it is worth it. Please do that.
Yeah, we're trying now. And then also now we're trying to transcribe all the videos. And so
That
once,
is true.
right, because then I can use the whatever I'm saying, the wording in there. So I'll have a virtual cataract coach, which basically will the input library is all the transcripts from 2,700 videos.
That is good because sometimes we don't have time to watch the video and quickly go over the so many videos are in there. When we have the transcript, then you can see what is important. And if it's amazing, then you go to the video and watch it. So the transcript is, that would be perfect too.
Yeah, so it, yeah, all these things in process, it's just, it takes a lot of time, a lot of work.
That is growth.
Now, of your graduating residents every year, so I was trying to do the math, 62 residents, but divided by 4 years, so almost 16, 15 and a half residents a year?
Not each year we get residents because it's dependent on the government political policy. We ask for like 6 residents and they may give more than that. According, they calculate according to our surgical volume or the and to ophthalmology and for the national political way of looking to the medicine. So sometimes we get like 15 residents for 1 year and the next year we may have 6 of them. So totally we have 62, but it's not like each year we have standard number of residents.
And for the graduating residents, do most do anterior segment surgery? Do some do retina fellowship? Some go into glaucoma? Some go into strabismus? What's the split usually?
We don't have any fellowship, formal fellowship programs in Turkey. So each surgeon is capable of doing anything and it's legal to do anything. So as we don't have it, after they graduate, they work as a general ophthalmologist, but they start doing things they like more and they come for, it's not called fellowship, but they come for observership or get extra training in that big centers like us. But we don't give a certificate like fellowship, so it's not formal. Usually they like retina more. And because of those injections, so many patients and lots of retinal surgeries, macular surgeries they get to do. And the corneal surgery is dependent on the grafts and you need to depend on the eye bank. So you need to be in a big hospital and you need to get the tissue. And we can do so many grafts because we have an eye bank and I'm the director of it. So if you are in trouble, you ask the eye bank to get one more tissue, is just the next door. So
that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice. That's what, that's how we have the courage to try new things. If we fail, we don't put the patient into risk. So we change the graft and put another graft.
Oh, that's a great idea. We have so many great cases there that you're doing. You should have your own video channel for your residents.
Yeah, we are looking into that. We would like to have that.
It would be great. You just have each resident make one video a month. That's it. Just one.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Even with 62 residents, you can have them make one video every other month. And then you can make a new video every day because there's so many people to make it.
That's right. That's right. Yes. That's a very good idea. Yes. We will do that.
I found that I learned so much by making a video. Because if it's a video of something I'm not super familiar with, I said, okay, let me go research this more. Let me learn this a little bit better because I want to have various kinds of videos. I want to have a full library. And so I said, okay, let me see what. And so I actually learned so much. I make notes before I do the voiceover. And so it forces me to stay, learning about all these new cases. It's fantastic.
I'm also amazed. Sometimes you say that I'm also watching this video for the first time. Let's see what the surgeon does. You sometimes do that. Wow, how amazing is that? You know, just simultaneously, you watch the video, you make comment. So this is why we love that so much, because this is so natural. This is how it flows. So it's not, it is with fun that you are teaching. So we love that so much.
Yeah, it's not super edited. So what I do is I get 50 or 60 videos sent to me a week, so a lot. I go through and I choose the ones that are pretty good. I kind of click through them. If I see an they're pre-edited to about 5 minutes, I'll click through and say, oh, that's going to be a good one. And then I won't watch it until I'm going to record the voiceover. And then you'll be surprised. Sometimes, especially if I'm traveling, I'll make the voiceover just using the voice memo app. That's it. Right? So you listen, it's like, you know, it's funny.
It's so practical.
First ever poster capsule rupture. So I'll just record it here while I'm watching the video, if I'm traveling especially. And then I'll airdrop it, sync it up, and then be done. So it's fun. I think it's watching the video for the first time. There's a realness there to it.
Yes.
And so sometimes I'm wrong. Sometimes I'll make a comment like, oh, I was wrong.
So this is good. So this is like watching a live surgery, you know, at that moment you see it and you make comment. So it's better to record for the first time. And so it's much more real.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, I want to commend you. I want to say thank you for being on the podcast, but more importantly, thank you for being such a great mentor to, gosh, now hundreds of ophthalmologists in practice have trained with you. It's really incredible. Maybe even 1,000. You've been doing this 62 residents at a time. You may be getting close to 1,000 residents trained. It's huge.
This is for the last 6 years that the City Hospital is founded. So these big numbers belong to the last 6 years. Before that, it was a smaller practice, but still it's like 30 years of teaching. So it's, you know, I'm so happy to touch the lives of those young people. So this gives us the appreciate life, and this is how we feel gratitude to life.
Oh, for sure. And your voice, your teaching will be in their minds forever. That's and that'll help them treat and help thousands of patients each. So it's really an incredible impact.
This is the only way to be immortal, to teach something to a person.
Right, for sure. Pass the knowledge. Oh, well, you are doing a fantastic job. Again, I want to thank you so much. We've already been talking for 1 hour. I can't even believe it.
Yes. Thank you.
But you're really very welcome.
Thank you.
My pleasure, my dear. I want to remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we've got a new Cataract Coach podcast every single Sunday. Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google. Everywhere you find a podcast, you find the Cataract Coach podcast. Of course, we have a new Cataract Coach videos every single day. And remember, check out our sister channel, retinarounds.com. So until next time, I'll catch you later.